Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Human Rights Demand. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. This is Mary Neal. I want to welcome you to Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Reports. Dr. Ansari, how are you today?
I'm great, Mary. Good morning. Good afternoon, rather. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you. I understand you have a great show for us today, another opportunity to learn from you, sir. We know that you are the dean of the American Institute for Human Rights. You are an international human rights attorney, and we so much appreciate your coming and bringing us your human rights reports every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So go ahead, sir. The audience is all yours.
Thank you very much, Mary. Today we're going to discuss restorative justice and restorative practice. Restorative justice is a philosophy that is focused on healing harm among individuals and communities. It is an ancient and sourced way of doing things from Aboriginal and Indigenous cultures from around the world. Restorative justice is an aspect of restorative practice. You introduced me as a human rights attorney. The type of law that I practice as a human rights lawyer, rather, is human restorative law. That's the type of law that human rights lawyers practice, is human restorative law. And in human restorative law deals with healing and the human being from some type of harm or some type of affliction from a state or a group that the state has acquiesced to by omission in not stopping the harms that come to people within the state. So restorative justice is another synonym for reparations, except it's much more into the practice and into the definition of what restoring a human being or repairing a human being connotates. By connecting people impacted by harm, restorative practice aims to transform relationships. In the United States context, that would be restoring our relationships with each other. People that have been harmed take on the attributes sometimes of those who have harmed him, have harmed them. This is a psychological redo that is a phenomenon that is sometimes hard to gather. You've been harmed by certain practices, and now you use those. And you act out by harming people in your society. So you see people who have been harmed, people that are in poverty, they are afflicted with the ills of poverty, such as domestic violence. This is striking out to the closest, most intimate person in a relationship with you. This is a psychological harm that is increased when frustration sets in, like poverty and other harms, like oppression sets in. We see more instances in our community of black on black violence than actually white on black violence. We're harmed by the system, but we act out towards each other in a violent way. This is a harm. So how can you heal a community like this? The community, in a human restorative practice, the community is a part of the healing practice. And by connecting people impacted by harm, again, restorative practices aim to transform those relationships, so that we don't act out in those ways against each other, and we can begin to act in a way that will move toward removing the greatest harms to us, which is the systematic harm of a racially exclusive and harmful society. Contrasting mainstream formal systems of justice that we have now, which is very little in the United States. The United States has moved away from rehabilitative practices in all aspects, especially in the criminal justice system. And this is a counter or a different approach, a human rights-based approach to those types of harms. Restorative practice recognizes the therapeutic value of having all impacted parties respond to a crime, of the victim, as well as the community, as well as the perpetrator. When a crime is committed in a community, whether it's burglary, rape, robbery, a murder, and the whole community is impacted, just not that one person is impacted. If you are a person kills someone, that impacts the community. It impacts the people in the community because now they're afraid of those harms, and it definitely affects the families who have either the perpetrator in them or either the victim in them, and the relationships between those two families are at odds. And the community is at odds because one person is not an island, and there's reverberations, and especially in our communities, and you see that in, especially among the young people, where there are retaliatory killings. And there's killings against members of families that were not even connected with the original incident. So restorative practice, if we had a restorative community type way of dealing with this, it is in the long run a better way to resolve the problem. Is very different. It's very different because we have been used to being oppressed by a judge and a district attorney, a parole officer, a probation officer, and the prison complex. When one person commits a harm, and that's the usual thing. You go before a judge and you get sentenced and you do whatever amount of time in one of the most horrid places called prisons in the United States, where there's a tremendous violence against people, tremendous trauma that the inmates have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, and which leaves them a shell of a person, a very violent, inhumane person when that person leaves that prison. And in the end result, you see a society that has a lot of traumatized people in that society. And this increases the violence between that person and the rest of the society, because now that person who has just gotten out of prison is more violent. They may be sexually fractured by what has happened in prison. So what we find is that the criminal justice system is not a well thought out and a system to deal with populations. So restorative practice is a place where all impacted parties respond to a crime. And in this, people can share their stories of impact, and then meaningful change can begin. Because now you have the perpetrator, you have the victim who is in harm, and you have the community. These are all of the parties that are impacted. These are all the parties impacted by crime. Let's look at the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Let's look at our children, how this could help our children. The United States has just passed the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and just recently. And some of the things that some of the problems that we have with our children are the fact that and the parents, the fact that they are not doing well in school, they're not taking school seriously, they have been influenced by a drug and rap culture that is that doesn't instill principles or integrity or the correct view of relationship between male and female. So we have a situation in which these children are acting out this type of destructive culture that has began, and now they are doing things like murder, violence, rapes, and violence against females. So, what would be the proper response to heal a sexual attack? We have a sexual attack, and instead of going the traditional route, we bring that individual in, we bring his family in, we bring the victim in, we bring the victim's family in. In a rape, you wouldn't want to bring the community into that situation, so you would bring family members on both sides, and you would bring a facilitator. And in this discussion between the perpetrator and the families and the victims' families, a sense of forgiveness, of remorsefulness, and any type of payment to rectify that family's grief, or the right type of remorse, or that right type of restitution to rectify that rape victim situation. Now, how does that differ from same case between two young teenagers? Is that different, or is that better than the young teenager coming in and getting a three year sentence in a juvenile detention center, in which he's going to become more violent, more sexually messed up than he already is, as opposed to a situation in which he's confronted with his problem and what he did? He has to pay for it in some type of way, restitution. Both families are involved, and the victim and the perpetrator is involved. There are overtures of remorsefulness, restitution, and, of course, a promise never to engage in that type of behavior again. Is that a better way to do this than the other way? Let's take another example. Let's take a burglary in which a person breaks into someone's house, he's caught, and the burglar, the family whose house has been burglared, as well as the community, is now brought in to deal with a burglar. And in this restorative circle, and it's called a restorative circle, this is the best way to do it in a circle type of manner with the facilitator who doesn't vote and but conducts the both sides of the dispute and then obtains the consensus of what should be done in the particular situation. So now we have a burglary situation. And in the burglary situation, the burglar, of course, has to give restitution for what he took and any damages, any doors, or screens that he cut, windows that he broke to get into. The whole community, people of the community are there, so now they know him. They know what kind of things that he has done. And they are not there to condemn him, but to make him see the error of his ways, pay for what he's done, apologize to the house that he has encroached upon, and would this be a better result? And would this tend to over time reduce the amount of burglaries in a neighborhood? Now. This is restorative practice in a criminal justice setting. Now we take it out of the criminal justice setting because now it's going to be different, and we put it into a state practice when the state has harmed people. Now, instead of having a restorative circle, you have conferences of reconciliation, restitution, reparation, reparative measures. I won't say reparations because it's totally has been misidentified and misdefined by almost everyone who has used the term reparation. Because many people think that reparations is simply obtaining a check at the end of some type of court proceeding, and it's not like that. There's a myriad of different things that go into restoring a community that has been harmed by crimes against humanity. So when you have a situation when you have crimes against humanity and you are using a human rights restorative justice practice approach, you look at the harm that was done. And in this case, we totally understand most of us really understand what harm was done. So we look to a UN, and I talked about this before, and it's the main and the most succinct definition of reparative measures in restorative practice and restitution is UN General Assembly Resolution 60/147. That's UN General Assembly Resolution 60/147. The name of this resolution is, and what it lays out is the basic principles and guidelines on the right to a remedy and reparations for victims of gross violations of international human rights law and serious violations of international humanitarian law. This is the law on restorative measures and reparative measures, which are the same thing for the most part. When you go down to I'm going down to section 10, which is the remedies. Okay. Remedies are for people who've been harmed by these gross human rights violations, such as ourselves and other people from all around the world, Sudan and Kenya and country right up under Kenya, Rwanda, sorry, who have experienced genocide in Palestine, crimes against humanity, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Burma. The island of Papua New Guinea, which is a black island. I'm so glad that Mary is involved with that, and we also have to get more involved with that. It's a black island, which most of the islands around the United States are African islands and made up of African indigenous people. This is one of them that has experienced crimes against humanity. So what are the remedies for perpetrators, for state perpetrators, or states who had groups inside of them, like in our case with the KKK, White Citizens Community, and in all of these areas there's different small factional oppressive groups that get together and harm people that are not particularly paid or have uniforms by the state, but are instrumental in committing crimes against the state, in which the state should have stopped or attempted to stop. Sometimes states don't stop them because they are in line with them. In any case, how to restore and what to do with those people? Well, one thing, there's a myriad of a list of about 20 different things that should be done to the person who's been harmed. One is that, of course, restitution should, and this is 19 under Section 10, restitution should, whenever possible, restore the victim to the original situation before the gross violation of international human rights law or serious violation of international humanitarian law occurred. Restitution means to give that person back what you took from them. It's a restoration, in our case, and this is what we don't get as African Americans, but most people do get it. But they took, what slavery did was to take our free will. It took our liberty, our liberty interest. So the first thing that the UN law says to restore to a people that's been set upon in that kind of way is to restore their liberty. And this is one thing that we really have to understand. We have to restore. No one can restore our liberty. Only the people who have been harmed can liberate themselves. No one, and this is what makes the American fable history of emancipation, which I really dislike that name because emancipation deals with children. You know, he emancipated. Lincoln thought that we were just so childlike that he emancipated us. This is something you do to minors when they are abandoned by parents and they become of an age where they can do for themselves, they become emancipated. This is for children, this is for minors, this is for people that, in any case, this is something that is a fable in American history because that didn't occur. But people are supposed to restore themselves, and the point is that we have to restore our own liberty, which means that we have to decide amongst ourselves to define ourselves in a new way outside of how America defines us. Because if we don't do that, then we have never obtained a liberty interest. Then to be assumed into a second or third class citizenry, near slavery status, is not restorative justice, and it's not a restoration of liberty. It's something that someone else has done for us that we should do for ourselves. So that's a major point. That's a threshold point for African Americans. The enjoyment of human rights, that's the restitution. In America, they call it the right to civil rights, accommodation, the right to sit on the bus, the right to have a seat in a law school or medical school. These are things that come with just being a human being, and they are not just something that a state gives you other than the fact that you're in that state. So some things that civil rights was supposed to give us, we were supposed to have anyway. Restitution deals with identity, who we are, which is a very, very important part of liberty. In our case, we cannot be obtain restitution until a collective restitution, until we decide to be a collective and have a collective identity. And this is the problem with the restoration of liberty piece. If someone gives us a 14th, 15th, and 13th amendment and says you're fine, you're liberated, it begs the question as to our decision-making processes, because if we was liberated, it would come from us and not from someone else. And we would have an identity rather than the one they gave us as Negroes and second-class and colored people, black people, niggas, you know, those connotations that they gave us. In a true liberty situation, we would, in an identity situation, we would define ourselves and define our parameters of rights, and which is very different from the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment. We would define whether or not we wanted to be independent, which was independent of those amendments, and to have our own constitutional basis and our own constitutional and territorial areas. It's very different. So restitution is something that never has...
Dr. Ansari?
Yes.
Dr. Ansari, you
yes,
are
yes.
so right. You are absolutely right that African Americans need our self-autonomy. And right now we have 2 minutes left for callers to call in and get the line. And the telephone number to call in is 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. If you have questions and comments, you need to call in because you won't be able to ask or comment on the Internet. We have one caller holding already. Also, I want to invite you to come back every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Dr. Ansari's Human Rights Reports. That's every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time now. And I also want you to know that in about 1 minute, if you're listening by computer, you might be disconnected, but the show continues for another 15 minutes, during which time Dr. Ansari will answer individual questions and comments. So, you do want to please return to Human Rights Demand for today's whole show and have it at your disposal to listen to anytime, 24 hours a day, any day. So thank you, Dr. Ansari. I'll turn it back over to you. You have another 15 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. I was talking about restitution and liberty interests and identity interests. These are things that have to be given back to us. Family life. That was something that after slavery was and is a part of restitution, because during the slavery time, we didn't have the right to a family. In the context, in a normal context, citizenship, We never participated in citizens prior to that. And the other thing that's set out is a return to one's place of residence. That was that opportunity was short. It was curtailed, even though Abraham Lincoln and members of the American Colonial Association was trying to find places to transport us after the Civil War, rather than to assume us into the context of being third or fourth class citizens. But in any case, the return of one's place of residence was not given to us. We were not given the opportunity during a period of time after the Civil War when restitution should have taken place. Return of property. Our property rights in Africa were taken from us when we were taken from the land. So we lost the property and land rights in Africa, although we maintain at this time a right of return, and that's to all the African countries that we came from. We do have that right of return. That's international law, though that was not afforded to us by those who harmed us and under the auspices of restitution and what they're supposed to do to people that they harmed. And a return of property, and our property rights have never been returned. And property deals with labor. Labor, if you labor for someone, and usually how it goes, that you get paid every week, every 2 weeks. During that week of time that you've labored, you have obtained a property right. You may have not got paid yet because it's not Friday. You may not have got paid, but the company owes you for 5 days of labor. Well, we have a huge property right that has never been paid that built America, that built its infrastructure, its farms, its economy when it had no economy, developed land when it had no development on the land. These are property interests that we have never been paid for. And under the restitutionary clause of UN 6147, the reparative measures, assembly measure, we have the right to that return of that property, of that labor interest. A lot of times, you know, people think that we lost that. No, that property interest is still alive and is the foundation of America's wealth. We have a right to a piece of that foundation, because we contributed to that. Our labor contributed to that. And just like the sons and daughters of the slaveholders and the slave masters who benefited from that money has, they still have that money. That money has not, those families are still wealthy. And our families are desperately poor. So restitution is the first restorative measure that a country or a state is supposed to be involved in. The next is compensation for damages. This is from humiliation to sexual damages of being having access to our women and having access to our men. Those compensatory damages resulting from gross violations are another part of restorative justice. And when we talk about states, this is another part of that. To compensate us for our physical or our mental harms. Many of us are still harmed by inferiority complex. You see it abundantly in our society, the difference between color colorations, the skin to hair texture, to the calling of each other's out of their names as the N-word is proliferated in our young people. They don't even know how harmful that is. When in our generation we had got out of that and we called each other brothers, sisters, and it's hard to harm your brother or sister, but in this generation, it's easy to harm a killer nigga. That seems like they even go together, killer nigga, beat a nigga. These are taking on the attributes of the oppressor and how he acted toward us. Now we've taken on that type of connotation or that type of attitude toward each other, and it's vicious, and it needs to be restored, and we need to be rehabilitated from that. And the cause of that condition, which is the United States, Spain, France, and all those who conducted the slave trade, these effects are effects that need to be dealt with in a setting of a medical expert, because that deals with our mental harm. So physical and mental harm is a compensatable harm. Lost opportunity, including employment, education, and social benefits, that's also a part of restorative justice. Material damages and loss of earning, including loss of earnings potential, from the millions and millions of brilliant African Americans who were not given the opportunities in the 1880s, 90s, early 1900s, 90s, and even now, and not giving them the right opportunities because of racial exclusion. So these are part of the remedies that need to be restored. Moral damage. We've suffered a tremendous moral damage from being around immoral people and having immoral acts placed upon us. We have a real problem, especially now the Black Democrats have a real problem because the country that's run by the Democrats are involving themselves in human rights violations in all aspects of the society, from its attacks, and it's allowing the police to attack us in the United States, to the lack and disparity that has come out of being discriminated against, and the lack of unemployment and that sort of thing. These are injuries that have to be compensated from, and these are moral injuries, because if you're a Black Democrat, that means you go along with these policies, or either you're too weak or to object to what's going on. The invasions of Africa and invasions of other countries, those are moral problems. Bombing of other civilizations, discriminations against Muslims, discriminations against people with mental infirmities, discriminating against African Americans. If we go along with the Democrats and the Republicans without an outrage, that affects our morality. That means that we are going along with people who are immoral. And the United States is an immoral country because of the bad things that it does to other people, which is the definition of morality. So we suffered a tremendous moral harms that have to be rectified. So human restorative measures deal with all of those types of issues, some in the criminal justice context and some in the state to individual context. If you're dealing with the criminal justice context where you have harms that the community can be involved in restoring and healing the differences between the perpetrator and the victim, that is one side of human restorative practice. The other side is restoring harms that have been inflicted by a state. And that is another side of human restorative practice. And our UN human rights defenders will learn both of those sides and be able to enact certain remedies in that regard. So thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you, Dr. Ansari.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Ansari. I appreciate you explaining that to everyone. You do have a caller on 5405, and you have 4 minutes remaining. So would you like to take your call now?
Yes.
All right. 5405, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mary. It's me. Hi, sir. It's me, Anna Santiago from New York City. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Your name again?
Anna Santiago from New York.
Hey. Oh, very nice to speak with you, Anna. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Ansari regarding human rights?
No, I was just, I like to educate myself, and I was just hearing it, because you know me. You know. But I agree with all he said.
So
I agree everything he said about the abuse and all the stuff that's going on in the entire world.
Absolutely, Anna. And I'm so glad you called. And we ask you to grab the link after today's show and share it with your online friends. Thank you so much. Dr.
Yes, I will.
Sorry,
I have a little
continue.
Bit. I have a bad news. My son got beat up on the weekend. Real bad, Mary. Real bad.
Your son is incarcerated. Is that right?
Yeah, he's a lifer in Pennsylvania, and I'm suspended for life.
Right. Who beat him? Was it the guards or other inmates?
He had a. I'll just find out that he had an incident back in 2002 with a CO. At SEI Forrester, and he was supposed to do the program. Don't know what happened during the weekend. He was transferred from Huntingtown to Forrester back, and I guess the CEO approached him and hell broke loose.
The CEO abused him, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. I got the CEO name and everything because my son wrote me a letter. Let me know what happened.
My goodness.
Wow. So this
yeah.
is a case, Dr. Ansari, of inmate abuse. Thank you for calling, Anna. I believe, Dr. Ansari, if he doesn't have time to address inmate abuse today, I'm sure he will address it on some of his human rights reports because he's on the air every Tuesday from 1 until 1:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we are so glad to have you call in.
Thank
you. Dr. Ansari, you have another 2 minutes.
Well, yes. I'd just like to tell Anna that topic of prisons is definitely one of the topics that, and prisoners' rights and the treatment of prisoners, as well as the rules that prisons are to be governed by, will be the topic of an upcoming lecture as soon as. Probably right after we get out of the series of identity and restorative measures, we will definitely deal with that's a major topic. And I totally understand that the prison systems are constructed in a way that does not serve the purposes of community and society, and this is the reason why we are adamant in pursuing a human restorative approach to crimes that involves the perpetrator, the victim, as well as the community, because we want to lower the crime rate. We don't want recidivism. We don't want continual acts, and we don't want our children going to prisons. And if they do,